It's the Garden Nerd Tip of the Week podcast, where we spend time chatting with expert gardening guests and we ask for their favorite tip. I'm Christy Wilhelmi. Thanks for joining me. My guest today is Michael Whitman, founder of Blue Sky Biochar. He teaches people how to make and use biochar in gardening and other applications. Michael is also a marine naturalist and an animal rights activist, and his work focuses on regenerative soil health, creating living soil. Welcome to the podcast, Michael.
Thank you, Christy. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah, and we met years ago when you introduced me to Blue Sky Biochar. I think it was like 9 years ago. I
don't know. Oh, yeah, quite a while ago.
And ever since then, you've been one of the mad scientists in my gardening circle. And I know you have, over the years, been telling me about really cool things you've been experimenting with. So for the amusement of our listeners, can you describe your garden operation at home?
Sure. We have a very large backyard. I guess it's about 20,000 plus square feet.
That's a big backyard.
It's pretty good size. We have no front yard, but it's all in the back.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a little citrus area with 5 citrus trees on the north side. Then we have a large open area. And we are developing that. And we decided a few years ago that, you know, after we put our main raised beds in,
mm-hmm.
and they're a little unique. We have 3 types of raised beds. One of them is made from these 2-foot by 12-foot recycled plastic sheets that we turned into a circle. So they're 2 feet high and 3.5 feet across. We have 4 of those.
And how thick are those? I mean,
it's
the
about
material.
5/8 of an inch thick.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's pretty good stuff. It's made from that same kind of plastic recycled decking material you
like
find.
Like Trex.
Yeah, kind of like
okay.
that, exactly. And they last for many years, and they're great. They're wonderful. And, you know, if we ever decided to move them, you know, take the soil out and just go with them.
Pick them up and go.
Yeah.
Cool.
Then next to that, we have a 10-by-12 raised bed that is a what we call our fortress. It's completely covered with steel mesh, or what we call farm screen.
Okay.
Throughout floor, walls, and ceilings. It goes down 2 feet, so no critter gets in.
Oh, sounds delightful.
Yeah, it's great. Hanging from the girders on the top, we have 6 hanging tomato plants. And see, because I come from New York, so we got to build up.
Right, of course.
And then we have, you know, we will usually put 6 hanging and 6 in the ground. Of course, all that's out right now because we're ready to do winter crops.
Yeah.
And we grow a wide variety of things. And the soil in there we've been building for many years. And it's what I would characterize as living soil.
Yeah.
Some people have dirt. Some people have soil. And some of us have living soil. And there
yeah.
is a distinct difference. And I have a particular formula that I use to create living soil of certain ingredients or components.
Yeah.
Biochar being the first.
Right. And I'm wearing, no one can see this, but I'm wearing my shirt that says dirt is dead, soil is alive. So it's totally appropriate that we're talking today.
And why don't you read my shirt?
Your shirt says carbon-based life form. That's awesome. And it has the elemental symbol for carbon.
And I'm also have a piece of biochar around my neck.
On a
and
necklace.
And a buckyball.
And a geodesic. Dome.
This is a Buckyball.
Buckminster Fuller.
One of my heroes who I met many years ago.
That's funny because I just interviewed someone who's got a garden, a greenhouse geodesic biodome that she's gardening
oh,
in. So
wow.
anyway, very cool.
That's great.
Anyway, this is a cool tie-in. So,
yeah.
so you've got raised beds and you've got fruit trees and you have, I know you have a fantastic composting operation. What does that look like?
Well, actually, I want to tell you about one more of the raised beds.
Okay.
It's kind of different. It's actually not a raised bed. A friend of mine, Ray Serino, got me these.
Good old Ray. He's
old
another
Ray.
One of our mad scientist friends.
Yes. Ray got me these 40-inch diameter old 1980 satellite dishes.
Wow.
Up on a stand on a tripod,
uh-huh.
which he made for his mom so she didn't have to lean over. For gardening, because she got, you know, older and couldn't lean. When she quit, he gave them to me. And I have my strawberries in one with a fire pit dome cover to keep the birds out.
Oh, cool.
And the other one is for herbs. And all the drip irrigation that goes in comes out the bottom. We collect that and use that somewhere else. We repurpose, recycle everything on our property.
That's so great.
Yeah.
And these satellite dishes are how wide?
40 inches across,
okay.
and they're about a foot deep in the middle.
So you can still reach all the way across.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
They're great.
I was picturing something.
And boy, we grow some amazing strawberries in there.
I'll bet you do.
Yeah, especially considering we have the fire pit dome cover to keep the birds out, because
yeah.
before we had that, the birds would eat us up.
Right. And you're in Moorpark, right? No,
Thousand Oaks.
You're in
yeah,
Thousand Oaks.
Thousand Oaks.
Got
and
it.
We welcome people to come visit. We have tours coming through regularly.
Oh, cool.
I have film crews and do seminars and workshops there on a regular basis.
Nice. I want to come back to your composting and your irrigation system, because I know at one time you were experimenting with some pretty interesting stuff. But first, let's talk about biochar, because this is what you're known for. Mm-hmm. What is biochar, and why should we use it?
Well, biochar is short for biological charcoal, or carbon, number 6 on the periodic table. And biochar has been around for 497 million years. When the first plants started to grow on land, which was about that time, prior to that, everything is in the ocean, and the whatever plants were on ground were simple lichens and mosses and very simple things. When plants started to grow, and the first fires that burnt them left that char behind, and it regenerated our soil. So biochar is charcoal suitable for soil, and it is the management system of soil. Mm-hmm. It manages our water, holds 7 times its weight in water. It manages our nutrients. When we establish with proper protocol biochar in our soil, we'll reduce our runoff of nutrients by 80%. Mm-hmm. That means we're going to keep our nutrients in our root zones. The third thing, for me, most important, is if you were to ever see a photograph of biochar blown up from an electron microscope, you'll notice it is very porous. And those pores are luxury condominiums for microbiology in the soil.
Right.
Both bacterial and fungal. And yes, it has extremely high surface area. So a piece of biochar the size of a small mandarin orange, if you measure the surface area in every pore, that'll be about the size of a football field. Mm-hmm. That's how much surface area there is.
So it's basically, I've heard you describe it as an empty bank account on occasion, where it's a vessel for receiving water and nutrients and microbes. So you tend, I've seen you inoculate it before putting it into soils.
Yes, that is a very good description of it. The word inoculating is a very common term for what we want to do to get biochar ready to use, because raw biochar has a few issues that need to be fixed before we put it in the soil.
Namely?
Well, the first thing is biochar is hydrophobic initially. So that means not liking water. It doesn't absorb as quickly as we would want it or as efficiently. So what prevents that is inside the pore structure, the surface tension is very high and it's pushing it away. So we need to break surface tension. Composting is the best way to do that.
So do you add biochar to your compost bin?
Constantly.
And I have done that. You've given me a giant bag of biochar, and every once in a while I throw in a layer of the pellets that you've given me.
Yeah.
And so then I know that I'm staging my compost to receive more or to be able to hold more.
Right. The pellets were a good way. We actually don't make them anymore. We still have some left. We're using granular 1 to 10 millimeter. It's far more efficient and far faster working. And it gets, rather than say inoculate, let's use the term makes the biochar habitable.
Oh, very cool. I like that.
Much more accurate.
Yeah.
Because there are several issues, 4 main issues about biochar that we have to fix or adjust first. And the first is making it hydrophilic.
Right. Interested in taking in water.
Correct. Yeah. The next one is adjusting the pH. Now, there's a misnomer that high pH biochar is going to make your soil high pH. It does not do that. It is a very weak buffer. Mm-hmm. If the pH is a little high, the microbiology won't move in as fast or as efficiently. When you lower that pH a little bit, they move in, makes it more habitable.
Mm-hmm.
The next issue is the ash content. Now, commercial biochars, for the most part, have very low ash, so there's no too much worry about that. But if you're making your own biochar in simpler systems, you may have a little more ash. And by the way, ash is not good to put directly in soil.
It is not. And for us, we have very alkaline soil to begin with, and ash makes soil more alkaline, so we don't want to do that ever.
That's right. It causes a liming effect.
Yeah.
You know, I've always listened to people who said, oh, my grandfather used to take the ash out of the fire pit and put it in the soil. Like, oh, no, don't do that.
Yeah, maybe on the East Coast you can do that, but not here.
Even there, you don't want to do it. It causes a liming effect. Now, if you take that ash and put it in your compost, it neutralizes all the bad parts of the ash and brings out all the good parts.
Oh, okay. Good to know.
So ash is good in your compost, not in your soil.
Got it.
Also, remember, not only are our soils alkaline here, but so is our water.
Yes.
Yeah. So I filter all my water through hose filters.
Yeah, it's alkaline. It's like 8.0. 9 or something?
Well, like that's the highest. Mostly average about 8.1.
Okay, yeah. And that was, I found that out from someone else I interviewed for the podcast. We were talking about blueberries and how they want acidic soil. So if you acidify your water, then it helps with that.
So the next point on biochar, the next issue that we want to fix is the VOCs, or what we know as volatile organic compounds. Now, again, when you're buying commercial biochars, for the most part, they have very low VOCs. But if you are making your own biochar, you will have a bit more VOCs. Composting neutralizes that as well.
Great.
Now, most people who are getting into biochar or novices with it believe that the inoculation means that you're going to be putting nutrients in there so that it, when you put the char in the ground, it won't rob nutrients from your soil. Furthest from the truth. Or accuracy.
Okay.
Having nutrients in there is the least important thing about getting biochar ready to use or habitable. Fix the hydrophobic, fix the pH, fix the ash, fix the VOCs, put it in the ground. The current microbiology will happily move in because it's habitable.
Uh-huh.
If you happen to put nutrients in there, fine. But we have done research where we have seen putting nutrients into habitable biochar, putting it into the lab in the soil and in the field in the soil, come back 2 weeks later to measure our biology, and it was gone because the current microbiology ate it up.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not so important to put microbiology or nutrients into your biochar to get it ready to use. First, fix the hydrophobic, the pH, the ash, and the VOCs, then you're fine.
Now, I've heard about soaking biochar in worm tea.
Yep.
Beforehand. Is that another way to neutralize it?
It's good. The reason, yes, it's good. You can also use bamboo vinegar. You can mix it with compost, give it a little moisture, let it sit for a little while.
What's a little while?
Oh, a few weeks. A
couple weeks?
Okay. Yeah, or longer if you want.
Okay.
One thing about biochar.
It's carbon.
It's carbon, and there's nothing you can do to harm it.
Right.
It could sit out. By the way, biochar, its lifespan is 2,000 plus years.
Yeah.
It's a permanent amendment. It's a fixed carbon.
Yeah.
So it stays that way.
Which just brings up an interesting question someone has asked me in the past, and I didn't really know how to answer it. It's like, okay, so once you've added biochar to your soil, it's got this incredibly long half-life, so you don't really need to do it again. So what other uses for biochar
actually can continue to add it, but whatever you do add is permanently there.
Yeah.
Not everybody puts the proper proportions in the first time.
What do you think the proper proportions are?
Well, in raised beds, potted plants, and hanging plants, it's one part biochar to four parts soil, which is basically 20%.
One part to four.
Yeah, so it's 20%.
All right.
And the reason for that is those applications are much more vulnerable to drying out.
Mm-hmm.
And especially here in the Southwest where we are, we're vulnerable to the very dry air. So it drought tolerates wonderfully.
Great.
In the soils.
In native soils.
In native soils or in your ground landscaping area, I would say try to start at 3%, and, 20% is an awful lot.
That's a lot of carbon.
So, and to put it in at one time.
Yeah.
So here's my solution for that. I compost with the biochar, and I'm laying compost out all year round, multiples and multiples of times. So
yeah.
I'm always adding biochar and building it up.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
You can never overuse biochar. There's no point at which it will hurt anything. Now, there is a point at which it is not going to do any more, and that's the 20% level.
Got it.
Any more than 20%, you're not going to get that much more benefit.
This is good. This is all very good information.
Composting with biochar is absolutely an essential thing. First off, composting is the lifeblood of any garden. If you're not composting, you're not going to have the greatest living soil or any good soil at all, unless you're buying a lot of compost.
Right.
So composting is essential for any good garden.
And it's also essential for saving the planet.
Yes.
I'll just throw that in there.
Absolutely. I'm with you all the way on that.
Yeah.
So what I do is I add to my composting setup, I have almost 30 different ingredients that I use. I like a very complex compost.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of area, and I need a lot of compost. That's why I built this big compost barn, 10-foot-long pile, 6 feet wide, anywhere from 3 to 6 feet tall. We have an aerated system. Underneath the ground, there's a series of piping underneath the pile, below the steel mesh under the pile.
Right. This is the mad scientist part that I love.
It's an aeration system. Every hour, 2 minutes of air comes up through the entire area. and it keeps it aerobic all the time. We barely have to turn it. Mm-hmm. Instead of having three sections, we only have two. We add to the left,
and turn
we age on the right.
Right. And so these are jet blasts that shoot air through the through your compost pile.
It's not quite a jet blast, but it's a large 4-inch pipe. It's a drain pipe, simple plastic
piping
with holes in it. But the blower is so powerful, and there's only one place for the air to go because it's going up.
Got it.
The way we designed it.
So clever.
And the blower is one of those blowers they use to blow up those kitty bouncy things.
Uh-huh.
And then we have a special timer called a short-term timer.
Mm-hmm.
The whole system of the tubing, the blower, and the timer are under $300.
Cool.
Yeah, so you can make this system. The main ingredient besides the food waste, yard waste, eggshells, coffee, all the great things that we put into our compost, because we reuse everything on our property. The green bins you put out to the street, we haven't used them in 8 years.
Right.
We repurpose everything. So biochar being the key component, we're trying to use 5 to 20% biochar in our composting. Here's why it's so wonderful. When you're done with your composting cycle, and you start harvesting your compost to use, if you were to measure the nitrogen level left in that compost, if you got 1% to 3%, you're lucky. 5% on the outside. By putting biochar in there in the proper proportions of the proper protocol and mixing it in occasionally, you're going to retain 50% to 75% of that nitrogen.
That's really good.
It is amazing how strong or how powerful or how wonderful the effect of biochar is on your compost. So we're using rock dust and crab shell and many different things in our compost. But what we also do is we put the biochar as a blanket on the top of the pile.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a theory that I had, and I told it to a professor who studies compost at UC Riverside, and I said, I'm doing this because what is charcoal? It's our air filters, our water filters.
Right.
So by putting a blanket on the top, the gases that are coming out of my pile, there is methane, there is NOx, there is CO2,
mm-hmm.
I'm capturing them.
Right. And this is on your working pile, not the one you're
adding I put it on
the whole thing.
The whole top.
So you're basically topping each layer with biochar. And then do you pull back to add new material on your one that
you're building? It back, and then we add new material. Once we're done, we fill that area back in with the blanket.
Uh-huh.
And we're filtering out all those gases and sequestering those. So our pile is so clean to the atmosphere.
That's great.
And then we just mix it in as we do. We do occasionally turn. And then, of course, we harvest. And we have a big harvesting machine. It's a big, what we call a shaker machine.
I was going to say, is it a tumbler or a...
No, Brian from Organic Solution Worm Farm had this old shaker machine laying around.
Oh, okay.
And so I said to him, Brian, what are you doing with that thing? He goes, I don't know, you want to buy it? I said, no, but I'll store it for you.
Oh, nice.
And it's been in my place for 5 years.
Excellent. Well, that I love that system, and those are all great tips about biochar. Now, I know that biochar is not your only product, because you do sell biochar through Blue Sky Biochar, but you also sell wood vinegar and your newest discovery called Hyperdrive. Tell me a little bit about those.
Okay, well, wood vinegar is basically liquid smoke. So in order to describe this, we have to talk for a moment about fire. Fire being essential to our ecosystem. Cleans up excess plants. Many plants and trees need fire to propagate their seeds. But what most scientists in the United States do not get, whereas in Asia they have known this for centuries, is that the smoke from the fire is as important as the fire, because it inundates and covers everything and leaves that sticky residue there.
Hmm.
That condenses into wood vinegars.
Are you using a distiller to do that?
No, in a way, yes. On the commercial systems, when we make biochar, there is the gases and the liquids that come out of the wood. We condense that into, and then we make the wood vinegar from that.
Okay.
In nature, it works by the coating of the smoke on everything, and it naturally condenses into the wood vinegar and protects the plants and trees from disease and pests to an incredibly high degree.
Mm-hmm.
And because this kind of vinegars are very complex, they have hundreds of organic compounds that advance photosynthesis and stimulate growth.
Mm-hmm.
Apple cider and wood and white vinegar are fermented simple acidic acids, not anywhere near this.
Right, and I have to say that for the listener not present in this room, Michael smells like wood smoke right now, and it's like that's the smell of wood vinegar. It's not like an apple cider vinegar or anything fermented. It has It basically, he smells like he's been in a smoker for about 24 hours.
Yeah, I spilled some on me on a demonstration earlier today.
Yeah.
So we use wood vinegar for a lot of different things. Now, if we think about when the plants and trees that are propagating seeds during firing, the smoke's covering them.
Right.
Turns out that if you use the bamboo vinegar, I use bamboo vinegar.
Uh-huh.
Because unlike wood vinegars, they're all good. Bamboo vinegar just happens to be at the top of the pyramid because it has tons of silica.
In it.
And very little heavy tars, terps, or oils, whereas hardwoods and softwoods have almost no silica, but lots of tars, terps, and oils that have to be cleaned out before you use them.
Interesting. And also, bamboo is a very fast-growing plant, so it's more sustainable, I guess, to use as a biomass?
It's more than sustainable. It's regenerative. Sustainable is treading water.
Yeah.
Regenerative is moving forward.
And completely closed-looped.
Yeah, and it's organic, and it's a wonderful source, and yes, they can make a lot of it. And it is it's the only wood or bamboo vinegar, or they're all wood vinegars. We just call it bamboo vinegar. It's the only one in the United States certified by a state, California Department of Food and Agriculture, as an organic product. Nobody else has been able to do that in the United States. They haven't conquered getting the standards going in the U.S. for this yet, whereas in China, they've done this for, centuries. They got it down. They make the best in the world.
And so you're importing that?
Yes, and even with the tariff, it's still so amazingly cost-effective to use because it's concentrated. 1 liter will make hundreds of gallons, and that liter is about $25, so super cost-effective.
And real quick, before we get to how you use it, what function does it serve?
Well, it's both a growth stimulant. It's great for certain funguses and things like it's wonderful on powdery mildew.
So it's antifungal.
Antifungal. We're actually testing it this week on Phytophthora. We're going to be using it for the oak,
sudden oak death?
Sudden oak death with the borer beetle.
Okay.
We're going to be testing it with that.
Ooh.
Very confident it'll work.
Cool. I want to hear back.
Yeah. And so it's great for, aphids, mites, whitefly, powdery mildew. Wonderful. If you get to your zucchinis or your strawberries who get powdery mildew, especially those who have a lot of morning dew, you do it early enough, you'll never get it.
And so you apply it with a foliar spray.
Yes.
You dilute it a lot in a foliar spray. And you apply it to the leaves. Do you also do soil drenches with it?
We do occasionally if we need to adjust soil pH, but that's something you only do on occasion. We're talking about no more than 2 times a year.
And, okay.
And even when you do that, you don't need to do it too often. It usually does the trick pretty good.
And because it's antifungal, it always triggers in me the part about, how does it affect the soil food web, and does it cause a problem instead of creating a solution?
Actually, it does not. It actually, in very small quantities, it enhances microbiology. When we're using it for powdery mildew, we're using it in a not very strong thing. It just is great at knocking it out. But it also, because remember, nature made this.
Yes.
And it knows the good guys and it knows the bad guys. And it balances everything out.
So because there are so many fungicides that do not discriminate between good and bad fungi.
Right.
So you're saying that bamboo vinegar does.
It does. It has a great way of dealing with not knocking everybody out. When you purchase the bamboo vinegar, it comes in a Ziploc bag, the bottle,
and
along
gotta
with
keep
a
it
dropper.
In that Ziploc bag because it really does stink.
Well, the smell goes away pretty quickly.
Oh, okay.
It doesn't linger for long.
Really? Because I've opened up the bag and it still smells
yes,
like
yes, but if you actually drop some on the ground or drop it on a piece of wood, a day or two later it's not going to smell.
Okay.
It dissipates away pretty quickly.
Okay, so the liquid does.
Yeah,
that's
and there's
good.
A chart that comes
right.
with
yes,
it.
Yes, I've seen that.
I wrote this chart. The bottle... The company doesn't know how to explain it. So I wrote a chart. It's a two-sided sheet of paper.
Yeah.
One side's a history. The other side's the dilution rate. And if you read that thoroughly, you'll understand it.
Yeah.
You can always contact us. We have a website, blueskybiochar.com.
Yeah.
And you can always go to our website. There's wonderful information, plus a lot of great educational videos there.
Cool. And so let's jump to Hyperdrive, because this is your newest thing. You called me on the phone. You said, Christy, I've got the most amazing thing. And you sent me a sample. I have not used it yet, but I'm going to. And this is something that you said makes plants able to absorb more nutrients?
Yes, in a way. What it is to describe it, I would say that it is a very sophisticated surfactant/catalyst.
Okay.
And so what it does is it works with any foliar application, whether you're using a biological compost tea or just a straight nutrient like a fish formula or fish fertilizer or a kelp.
Mm-hmm.
I happen to use it with the bamboo vinegar and then sometimes throw a little kelp juice in there.
Okay.
What it does, when it was first described to me by this guy who called me up, referred to me by someone I'm well known around the country, somebody referred him to me for biochar.
Uh-huh.
And I asked him what he wanted to do with the biochar. And he says, well, we're working on this thing. My scientist partner, brilliant guy, he's created this stuff that will take nutrients into the stomata, into the cell structure of the plant immediately. And he said, excuse me, I've been around. That doesn't exist.
Say what?
He goes, it does. So I ended up on a conference call with them. They told me about it. They sent me some. I started using it, and I could not believe what happened. So this guy cracked the code on getting nutrients into the cell structure through the leaf. No one has ever been able to do it before. He'd created this product, broke that code, and this stuff is going to be huge. It's going to transform both agricultural and horticultural science in the world.
So what is it, though? Is it an enzyme? Is it a...
No, it's not an enzyme.
What is it?
It's mostly made from plant-based material with a very proprietary fish oil that's in it.
Okay.
And it basically allows that nutrient to enter into the cell structure of the plant. So it's kind of a surfactant.
Okay.
But it's also a catalyst at the same time.
So is it best to use by itself or mixed with a nutrient?
It can be used either way, but I always mix it with something.
Mm-hmm.
And in the minimum, I'll use bamboo vinegar. So I'll use 1 ounce of the Hyperdrive
mm-hmm.
to a half ounce of bamboo vinegar to a gallon of water. The very finest spray mist, very little.
So just a whiff of across the leaf surface.
That's it.
Got it.
Unlike normal foliar applications, we're throwing so much at it, hoping
right.
it'll stick.
You usually want to drench the whole surface and the undersides.
This is like an IV. We're getting it directly into the stream of blood, so to speak.
So you don't want to overuse
it. The chlorophyll and right where the photosynthesis is taking place. So a very small amount, very fine mist, and we prefer to do it as sun is going down when the plants are going to go into their quiet time.
Got it.
Or you could do it very, very early in the morning. I prefer in the evening.
Yeah.
Because then it has a whole night to do its action. The first time I used it, that very next day after I sprayed it, I went outside. And I'm not kidding you. The leaves started getting greener because you're going right into the action. And many individuals, Brian from Organic Solution,
mm-hmm.
he said his bamboo started greening the next day.
Crazy.
And new shoots came up. I sent it to another friend who's an expert on biochar and agriculture and horticulture. And he said, Michael, I feel like I spray painted the leaves green that day.
And what were you spraying? Just out of curiosity, what plants were you spraying with this?
Oh, I used it on some coleus.
Okay.
I used it on my pepper plants. I used it on flax. I used it on my fig tree.
Mm-hmm.
I used it on my Gerber daisies. And I used it on my cannabis.
Okay.
Now, what I know about cannabis is a lot because I started growing cannabis in 69. So 50 years of growing cannabis.
Yeah. That's a whole other podcast.
Yes, it is. But I will just tell you that growing cannabis in Southern California outdoors is a very tough thing because
yeah.
there's looper worms, corn worms, whole
All
range of guys
things.
That want to eat you up.
Yeah.
Last year, I got eaten. I went to Ron Whitehurst at Runcon Vitova, and he gave me some solutions.
Uh-huh.
This year, I tried something different. I mixed Hyperdrive with bamboo vinegar, sprayed the plants in an early stage. Not one critter touched my plants
Fantastic.
Because I got the bamboo vinegar into the cell structure where those looper worms drill in. And
oh, wow. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
So you are not yet selling Hyperdrive, or are
yes,
you?
Yes, we are. It's on our website. It's on our eBay page. We just haven't gotten a label completed for putting it on the store shelves yet.
Okay. I think people are going to be very excited about this. But we have to jump to tip time.
Sure.
Do you have a favorite tip you'd like to share with the Garden Nerd audience?
So the tip that I would give to everybody today is to write this down. Okay. Living soil has several components. The first thing is our fixed carbon, our biochar. It's the one that lasts forever. The second thing is our organic carbon inputs. Compost, worm castings are the two most popular, and I use both, not one or the other. The next thing is mineralization. All life on Earth came from minerals. The earliest forms of life formed deep in the ocean from hot vents pushing minerals out, no photosynthesis, lots of critters living around it and developed. Mineralization is very important. And on our website, we have a mineral complex that we sell. You can use azomite, you could use granite, basalt, St. George's Black, Leonardite. There's so many. Kelp meal, crab shell. There's a whole bunch.
Right.
I take 9 of those with powdered biochar, blend them together. Instead of having less than 100 that each one would have, or less, I have well over 400 minerals and trace minerals in our complex rock dust blend.
Wow.
$20 for 5 pounds. Once you do it, it usually goes anywhere from 3 to 10 years, depending on how much you use.
So apply once and it's good for
that. It's very slow release. You don't have to do it often.
That's so great.
And use, like, basically we recommend 1 pound per 50 square feet. If you do that, you're going to go 5 to 10 years without having to do it again.
Fantastic.
So the next step is building our fungal quality. The balance between bacterial and fungal is essential. However, bacterial, there's basically, you know, there's many different species, but there's 2 kinds of bacterial. There's good and bad. You know when it's bad, it smells bad. We know when it's good, it smells good. Bacterial can survive an ice age. It's so hardy. Fungal is so delicate and sensitive that as soon as you pull the soil out of the ground and raise it up to the air and light, the fungal starts dying. So we need to not only enhance our fungal, build our fungal, but also protect it. So for enhancing and building our fungal, we use mycorrhizae.
Mm-hmm.
And I happen to be privy to a lot of research on mycorrhizae from Dr. Mike Amaranthus, foremost authority in the United States, on the mycorrhizae. And he developed the Plant Success line of products a few years ago, like Great White and those things. He sold that company off. And he and his son, Zach, have created a new company called The Root Company. And their product is called Bigfoot. And I sell it on my website. It is the highest grade, best mycorrhizae in the market. There's a concentrate you can mix with water and drench. There's a granular you can add directly to the soil. I take a little pinch and put it in the bottom of the hole before I put a plant in there. It's the best. There's lots of good mycorrhizae. Nobody has what these guys have. So, point is, enhancing our fungal quality with that. Now, the final step in living soil is the one that protects not only the fungal or mycelium in the soil, but protects the soil in general, and that is mulch.
Yes!
Mulch is so essential.
So essential. It's a fungal food.
It is. That's why I like to use more shredded mulches than big chunky mulch, because they break down quicker and they prepare or they enhance that layer between the soil and the bottom of the mulch to really enhance and protect that mycorrhizae, that mycelium, that whole mycological jungle of things that live in our soil. Some people say, oh, mulch is great because it protects, you know, the moisture in there. Yes, it's wonderful.
It does so many more things.
Some people say, oh, it's great to pull the little weeds out. I don't really care about that. For me, it's what it does to the fungal. And here's an example.
Mm-hmm.
If you've ever been in a deep forest and there's a giant pile of leaves and you pull it away and look at the ground, what do you see?
Fungi.
Mycelium,
yeah,
that white stringy stuff, all that, and mushrooms and all. We're loving that.
Yeah.
So mulching.
I bring that home. So I've taken little pinches of forest mycelium and put it in a plastic bag and brought it home to inoculate my compost pile.
That's right. You don't need very much. It's like yeast. You just use a small amount.
Right.
Also, another tip on mulching, very important. Do not put mulch right against your tree trunk or against the base of your plant. Keep a little donut zone clear around it.
Exactly. I agree. Well, these are fantastic tips, Michael. Thank you so much for being on the Garden Nerd Tip of the Week podcast.
Thank you.
Where do people find you?
Well, we're blueskybiochar.com is our website. We have, and I want to boast a little bit here, we have more biochar and biochar-related and living soil products than any website I've ever seen on this planet.
They have a lot of really good
stuff. We also are on, we do social media, mainly Facebook. So we have our Blue Sky Biochar page, and I assure you that if you like that page, you're going to learn an awful lot. We post every day multiples of times. I am on there all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I have thousands of followers and friends all over the world, every continent except Antarctica. And we share back and forth all the things we do. In addition, on our website, if you look, we have a good video section. And then we have, if you look up the upper right, you'll see free video courses.
I was going to ask about that.
I highly recommend you take them.
Yes. All right, garden nerds, you can find links for Blue Sky Biochar's website and to Michael's free online biochar course at gardennerd.com this week. We'll also share Blue Sky Biochar's social media feeds as well. That's it for this week. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Visit us for tons of free gardening information at gardennerd.com and show your support for this podcast and the other free stuff that we do at Garden Nerd by becoming a Patreon subscriber. You'll find us on Instagram and Twitter under GardenNerd1, on Facebook as GardenNerd.com, and of course, our Garden Nerd YouTube channel. Happy gardening!